Hello and welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I am Tyler Smith.
I am David Bax.
And thank you for listening. David.
Yes.
How you doing?
I'm good. We haven't been in, outside of Patreon, we haven't actually recorded in the same room for a while, which is...
I forgot you were coming over tonight, and I thought like there, and until about 30 minutes ago, there was a whole bunch of shit on this table and behind you, and I moved it around. It's still in the room, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was like,
well, now I feel like I intruded, but we talked about...
Yeah, you did.
But we discussed that I was coming over.
I can't be expected to remember such things.
All right. Anyway, so here's what... I'm a while back, we haven't recorded a regular episode in person so long, we got something in the mail from a listener, and I forgot to bring it.
Okay.
I was like, I'm going to save this for when Tyler and I are in the same room, we'll open this present together. But we got a package from the Czech Republic. So if you're listening and you're one of our many, many listeners in the Czech Republic and you sent us something, we got it. Don't worry. I just forgot to bring it. It's still sitting on my desk at home.
My first thought is like, holy shit, man, what's the shipping on that?
Yeah,
like, that's got to be awful.
Yeah, but I mean, people love Battleship.
I know. You know, I mean, people are knocking on my door at all hours. So,
No, that's not true. We haven't said where you live.
True.
We've mentioned D's Cuts and Dr. Hoggly Woggly's Tyler Texas Barbecue.
Correct. Which is currently closed due to a fire.
I wonder if that's why, because Eater LA updated their list of like best barbecue restaurants in the city and removed Dr. Hoggly Woggly's from the list.
It's been
and
closed
I wonder if
for
that
a
is
while.
Reflecting the fact that it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not going to be closed forever. On the website, they say that it is not.
I hope that's true as well. Because there's a... I almost said in my neighborhood, but I forget that I moved a month ago.
Indeed.
In my old neighborhood, there was a Mexican place that I liked that had a fire pre-COVID.
Hmm.
And so they had a banner that was like, you know, renovating, opening soon.
Oh boy.
And then COVID happened and they still haven't reopened.
I have
seen some work going on there.
Okay.
But I don't know. Maybe they sold it and someone else is moving it. There's been no updates. But I hope Dr. Hoggly Woggly's does reopen.
Is Bear Pit on that list?
I don't think Bear Pit made the list, but I...
I don't think it should, to be honest. I've eaten there. It's fine.
I haven't been. I've been excited because the place that Natalie and I moved to is pretty close to the Bear Pit. And that's... Yeah. Natalie being from here, like, has memories of going to the Bear Pit as a child. And so, like, she was excited to tell her parents, like, we live near the Bear Pit. And they're like, oh, the Bear Pit. Because they also, you know, moved to, they live up in Camarillo. They retired in Camarillo. They haven't been to the Valley in a long time. But I've been excited to go to the Bear Pit just because it's, like, my new neighborhood barbecue place.
You
but,
know
yeah, I don't think it makes this list.
I totally get that. Like, anytime I've moved to a new neighborhood, and admittedly, like, you know, we moved to this house 5 years ago, but we moved... half a block away.
Yeah, I can practically see your
place.
Yes,
you can walk to our place. I'm sure I told that story that like the guys like
the movers
packed up all of our stuff into the moving truck and they're like, okay, we'll just follow you. I was like, okay. And I walked.
Yeah.
and they just were very slowly following me. But that's definitely a thing that I like to do is I get to a new place and I like to know like, okay, where, you know, obviously like where are the diners? Where parks and just various places that like help me to feel settled into a place. But and I will say like between country folks and various other places that we've talked about, not to mention another thing that I actually will not say now because it's so specific, but I added there's something near my house that is, I mean, that's right there. Like,
but
if you know about it, you
can you look that up?
Yes, you can.
Oh, okay.
So I won't bring it up. But if somebody is ever driving around this neighborhood looking for my house, if you see the thing I'm thinking, you'll be like, oh, I know what that is.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm going to go knock on Tyler's door. Yeah. Please don't do that. Anyway, unless you're prepared to babysit the kids. Because I'll walk away so fast.
What did you want to talk about?
Yes. So So I'm part of various... David, I don't know how engaged you are on Facebook.
I'm not engaged. I'm married. I was engaged. A little less than 10 months. 10-month engagement. Not a very long engagement. Not a 5-year engagement.
Indeed.
A 10-month engagement. But I've been married for 8 years.
Well, and I will say, like, I've spoken to Natalie. She said that at the time you were not very engaged. You just had this distant look in your eye and, you know, that... Huh? What? Just that constantly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm part of various groups on Facebook, and most of them are a lot of fun. It's just like fan stuff. I'm part of various like survivor groups and movie groups and that sort of thing. And I'm part of a couple of Batman groups because, yeah, all right, you never quite know when someone's going to say, hey, new action figures, here's the Riddler or something like that. But it can also be interesting, you know, because I'm not really, I wouldn't consider myself like a Batman, like fanboy sounds negative, but like I'm not a diehard Batman fan, right, as far as like the franchise. I like the Riddler and that's it. But, which is what makes this interesting. Similar, like I'm part of a couple of like Jurassic Park and Jurassic World groups. And so it's just always very, really interesting to see the people that like, this is their official fan thing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else. Because you do get glimpses of it, and you also find out things that you're like, I never would have known this otherwise. So there is a new push called Release the Schumacher Cut. There is this storied 170-minute Batman Forever cut. That was like, you know, sort of the assembly cut that Joel Schumacher, like,
yeah, but,
a lot of stuff, okay, that he shot and really liked and didn't want to remove.
But did he have a cut that he, because like, you don't want to, like, directors don't want their assembly cuts released. That's
the thing that somebody said, like, well, here are the scenes that are included, and they you know, they kind of, they sort of sketch out some of the details, and part of me is like, yeah, okay, yeah, fine, okay, great. I don't care that much. Like, it's, if there is in fact like an official director's cut, because, you know, when people talk about the Snyder cut, as much as I obviously hated it, I'm in favor of it being out there like that, through a series of, in some cases, very tragic circumstances. Yeah. Like, he was not able to finish Justice League the way he wanted.
Yeah.
So if there's a cut out there, then by all means, let's do it. Let's watch it. Well, Joel Schumacher obviously is no longer with us, but if there was this fabled cut out there that he himself said, hey, if I had my druthers, if I knew the studio was not going, you know, if I knew they would back me for my 170-minute Batman movie, then let's do it. If that were the case, then I'd say, yeah, that'd be a fun thing to see. But I cannot imagine that being the case.
It doesn't seem like it is. It seems like what it should be is release a Blu-ray with the deleted scenes.
Yeah.
Why not that? Like, that seems good enough.
Yeah.
And if he were alive and could, like, because, you know, like, Sylvester Stallone recently, like, recut Rocky IV, and there's, like, a new cut of Rocky IV.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I didn't see it, but there's a new Rocky IV. Like, if it were a thing like that where Joel Schumacher were still alive and they would let him, like, hey, let's go in and make the,
sure,
Batman Forever you wanted, yeah, at the time,
he wants to tinker with, or yeah, like Godfather 3.
Yeah, but don't start releasing people's assembly cuts.
I remember way, way back when I first heard about when Tom Waits started getting famous in the 70s. He had sent out these, I forget that there's a name for them, but they're essentially like sample, mm-hmm, tracks of like songs he'd written, but
like
they're
promos?
Not like promos. There's a, okay, name for it. Now I can't remember, but okay, anyway. So he would send these out to like he had already been signed. So he had sent like, hey, these are the songs that I've been working on, but they were really just like trial runs, not full orchestration or anything like that. Okay. It's mostly like him at a piano or him with a guitar or whatever it is. And eventually,
like demos,
something like, yeah, that. Yeah. And eventually the studio, like once it owned those. And so once it got,
label.
Yeah, the label. You're using, did I say studio? Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'm not.
But I meant to say company. But anyway, but label. Yeah. So they eventually, once he got famous, they released all of those like in a 2-volume thing.
This, yeah.
And he himself was like, these were never meant for public consumption at all. It's one of the reasons why he decided to like kind of leave that label. Mm-hmm. I think it was Elektra. But
Okay.
And I and
it's
from
Island.
He went from Elektra to Island,
okay.
And then Anti. But yeah, and so like he was really upset. And what's interesting is, I guess, I don't know if I'd say interesting, I got into some debates with people like back in college, and then oddly enough, again, when I went back to school, about artist intention. And there's this, certainly in the world of academia, there's this feeling of like, oh, every... Like, if we can read an artist's notebooks, if we can read early drafts or whatever it is, then we should do it because it will help us academically. And in my mind, it's like, I don't think it's any of our business. Like, when it comes right down to it, I'm very much in favor of like, the Orson Welles view, which is, like, go by the movies. Like, we should go by the movies that were purposefully released. And then the director's own comments and or the artist's own comments. And if there's something out there that the artist never intended, then I maybe out of curiosity, I can engage with it, but I certainly can't judge it. Yeah. Because when I was back in school, we had a reading assignment that was like, it was like somebody had found a director. I forget what director it was, but like this director's notebook in which like he was just writing out ideas for a film that eventually we would see, and the ideas have some like offensive elements to them, and so like people in the class were talking about that, and I was just like, guys, we weren't supposed to see that, and clearly this director also came to the same conclusion we did. We can't, I mean, sure we can judge people for the thoughts that, like, we can judge thoughts and be frustrated that someone would have those thoughts, including ourselves. But it's not like he said, yeah, this is great, let's do it. Like the cooler heads prevailed, and we can't, I don't know. I don't like the idea of judging or just engaging in like the brainstorming process. And to me, that's what it is, quote unquote, yeah. Schumacher cut kind of is.
Yeah. I wouldn't want people to see the notes that I take during screenings.
Oh,
because I think I have like, because I'm just like trying to write in the dark, and I will often write things that are probably pretty trite, knowing sure. that like I'm going to, when I write it out,
yeah,
like
flower it up a bit
or like put my own stamp on it or yeah. whatever, but just like making note of things that happen. I'm pretty much entirely on your page. Do you know, I know the answer is no. Do you know who the rapper Anderson .Paak is?
No.
Well, Anderson .Paak has a tattoo on his arm that says the following: when I'm gone, please don't release any posthumous albums or songs with my name attached. Those were just demos and never intended to be heard by the public.
Boy.
He tattooed that on himself.
Oh, hopefully, like, not in something that will be covered in a suit or something like that. Like, it needs to be, like, right there on his neck
yeah.
or something yeah. like that. But, yeah, it's, it is one of those things where, like, the going back to school was fascinating and I think extremely... helpful and inspiring and all of that, but it definitely did give me a snapshot. And the world of film criticism is, there's a lot of overlap, but it is different than the world. So the world of film criticism is different than the world of academia, film okay. academia. Film criticism, like, there's all kinds of theorizing, there's that sort of thing, there's interviews, there's discussion, there's analysis. But academia, it really does, I don't know. It's a little unscrupulous, because it is this feeling of like, well, we're curious, and because we're curious, everything is on the table, and I'm not in favor of that. Thankfully, I teach at community college where nobody's curious about anything.
You should. Never mind.
Okay.
I know, because I feel like I talk about Tom Sharpling too much, but when when he talks about going to community college and like first day of class, someone walks in the door and you have to wait a second to find out, like, is this a fellow student, the janitor, or the professor?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's, and you know what, like, I'm very much in favor of the concept of community college. Don't get me wrong, because I do think it gives you an opportunity to inexpensively get some credits and also kind of figure out what interests you, because there are a lot of people, you and I were not one of them. We're not these types of people. Like, we had a clear idea of what we wanted to do when we got out of high school. Not everybody is that fortunate.
Yeah, that's true.
So I do think community college is a way to,
like, was wrong. I knew I wanted to work within film, but I thought I wanted to be a cinematographer, and then like started taking cinematography classes, and I was like, I am bored. This is too technical.
Yeah, and I went in, I was just like, oh boy, I don't want to really decide. What's that? I don't have to pick a concentration? Beautiful. Directing, writing, and criticism. Here we go.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Now, I found, I liked the lighting part of, of cinematography, but I found the camera stuff to be... I'm glad that I know stuff from those classes, and I'm glad that there are people who do find it interesting.
Yeah, and that education, I mean, even if it was boring, that education is not wasted.
Certainly not.
Like, you are are still incorporating it in some way, shape, or form into your profession and your criticism. But yeah, it's, I know what you mean.
All right, well, you're also going to know what I mean when I talk about TweakedAudio.com.
Hmm?
TweakedAudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. They look great. They sound great. Tyler and I use them each and every day of our lives. Today I was listening to some of the work by the departed songwriter Paul Vance. He died at the age of 92 recently.
Oh.
His most famous song is the classic Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini.
Oh, okay. I know it.
So the guy who wrote that song... passed away. So I listened to that song today. I listened to, do you know the Perry Como song Catch a Falling Star?
Oh,
Catch a Falling Star and Put It in Your Pocket. Yeah, he wrote that. So yeah, he wrote some really fun stuff. R.I.P. Paul Vance. All sounded great on my TweakedAudio.com earbuds.
Oh.
They're available at a low, low price at TweakedAudio.com.
I just realized we, at the top, we rather than talk about the fucking Schumacher cut, I should have mentioned Philip Baker Hall.
Yeah, R.I.P. We'll probably do a... Patreon.
That'd be fun. Let's do that. Yeah.
They're available at a low, low price at tweakedaudio.com, but if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low, low price and no shipping charges. So please go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Code pretension. Tyler?
Yes.
We're back.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into it, shall we?
Indeed.
Last week, I had to suffer through a couple of breeders, a couple of baby havers.
Well, first off, we didn't breed, but I get what you're saying.
Okay. I guess that's true.
Yeah.
A couple of baby havers talking about having babies. But now we're on my turf.
Yes.
Which is also your turf, by the way.
Right. And
this episode
this was
your
my
idea.
Yeah. But yeah.
Today, we're going to talk about movie uncles. Movies about uncles or just notable uncles from movies.
Yeah. I think I first had this idea in this is usually where ideas come from for me, is I'll be watching a newer movie or a movie that people are talking about, and I just notice a certain dynamic in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be like, oh. And then my mind will jump to another movie that had a similar dynamic, and I'm like, huh.
Yeah.
Then here comes a third and a fourth and a fifth. I'm like, the hell's going on here? And then before you know it, it's like, okay, well, that's an episode, right?
Yeah.
And so I was watching, you know, it speaks to how long ago I had this idea. I was watching Come On, Come On. And
it's on my list.
Oh, absolutely. And I thought, like, oh, this is a, you know, this is a definitely an interesting, like, uncle movie. I mean, it's very much about this dynamic, uncle and nephew. And there is just something kind of specific about, I'd say, an aunt or an uncle, but it's something that you run across more in movies with uncles. I think, and we can talk about why in a moment, but I immediately started thinking about Manchester by the Sea and a few other things. Well, and then I thought, like, okay, well, this is something to dig into.
You're getting at what I'm finding to be a very important distinction that comes up in most of these movies.
Okay. Watch out.
Is that I'm worried that I'm about to get a ticket because I'm parked like in blocking the driveway or blocking the sidewalk. I'm in your driveway.
That's probably fine.
Okay. They're not like cruising in an SUV for that. There's no. Something else going on.
They're anyway, really so cracking down.
The big
here.
Distinction in both the movies that you mentioned and in most movies about uncles that is different from most of my experience with uncles as a kid is these are uncles who do not have kids of their own.
Correct.
That occasionally.
And are rarely married, actually.
Okay.
As well.
Yeah, that's true. As a kid, I had zero unmarried uncles who didn't have kids. Mm-hmm. I had zero unmarried uncles. I had one on my dad's side uncle who he and my dad's older sister did not have kids. And then I had an aunt on my mom's side who wasn't married and didn't have kids. And neither of them have kids to this day. But so I only had the one uncle who didn't have kids. And I'm not saying, I don't know if he was the uncle I was closest to, but I did find because my dad died when I was 21, which is still fairly young. And often if I was in need of like dad type knowledge, you know, about like usually about cars or something, the uncle I would go to was Uncle Ken, the one who doesn't have kids. And so I'm not sure why that dynamic is. Maybe I just feel like he has less, you know, going on. That's not true.
Sure.
That seems to be often the case in movie uncles, is that they don't have kids of their own. There are some exceptions. There's the awful Uncle Frank from Home Alone.
Uncle Frank, who has he's on my list here, yeah.
And is he the one who says, "Look what you did,
Look what you did, little jerk. Yeah.
I rewatched that, like, I was going to say recently, but like during the first year of the pandemic, like probably Christmas 2020, like the first pandemic Christmas, I did watch Home Alone. And I know it's like stupid and everything, but it's like super watchable.
It is. And I think one of the things that when we look back on Home Alone, we think of, you know, when we think back on it, we think of like, you know, the House of Horrors, but that Kevin creates. That's the last 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Up to that point, like it really is like this kind of goofy like kid fantasy of like, oh well, what would my life look like if I just had the house all to myself for a long stretch? And so I do think that those moments are actually like the best moments. Look what you did, you little jerk. It's like, you know, he said that in front of the whole fucking family, right?
Yeah.
And I understand that Kevin's parents are not thrilled with him, but if my brother ever said to my kids, look what you did, even if I'm mad at them, I'd be like, hey, guess who's never talking to you again? My kids and probably me. But everyone's fine with it because, hey, it's just Uncle Frank.
So let's, I guess, I'm trying to, I always try to like find ways to divide this up.
I categorized.
So I alphabetized. But
okay.
I think this leads us to, I think, a major, come on is a perfect example. The childless uncle who then becomes responsible for a child.
Right.
That's a huge number of these. Manchester by the Sea is one of them.
My first category here is just called caregivers.
Okay.
Yeah. And it might, in some cases, it's like guardian, if only for a short time, like come on, like Manchester by the Sea. In other cases, it could be a situation where like the kid's parents are still sort of in the picture, but the uncle is there giving advice, solicited or otherwise, and is sort of in his own way looking out for the kid. I'd say You Can Count on Me is an example of that, with Mark Ruffalo, another Kenneth Lonergan film.
Yeah.
I didn't see The Tender Bar.
Yeah.
But I know that Ben Affleck is this kind of uncle character.
Is that Uncle Charlie?
I don't know. I didn't see it.
Neither did I, but I feel, I like, mean, I feel like I heard enough about it. But.
And in our awards league, we kept referring to it as the Tendaba, even though it's not Boston.
Not a Boston,
but we, that didn't stop us from continuing to call it that.
Yeah.
And even writing it out in emails.
Okay, but should we? Okay. But
yeah, so caregivers, I have a big section there. And so then there's a subsection.
Let's start with movies where an uncle becomes a full-time
okay.
A parent replacement, like okay. Manchester by the Sea. The parent dies,
okay.
He becomes the full-time replacement. I have mine alphabetically. Did you see I forget the director's name. Did you see Bell?
No,
it's based on a true story.
Okay.
Of a mixed race, not the, this isn't the Bell movie, the animated movie from that last year. This is the 2013 movie directed by Alma Asante, which is about a mixed race woman. I'm trying to find out the year. Sometime in the 1700s in England, who goes to become the ward of her in her white, the white side of her family, who's English aristocrats. It's a very good movie, starring the great Gugu Mbatha-Raw.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
I've always liked her, but I don't know how. Like I said, I'm just going alphabetically. I don't know how much I actually have to say about the uncle here, except this is an example of what I'm talking about. That he now becomes the sort of parent figure to this woman, who's like a grown woman, but because it's the 1700s and she's unmarried, she's
sure,
like,
as far as like this specific situation of a parent or primary caregiver has died, the uncle is now essentially the primary caregiver, at least for a while, because, you know, a big part of Manchester by the Sea is that he ends up not being the caregiver for his nephew, but he's still in his life, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. So I have a few examples of that, including, and I guess obviously I'm not going in alphabetical order,
yeah,
but including the sort of the subset of, I guess in this case, you've got your aunts and uncles, but you've got your Harry Potter, your Spider-Man, your Luke Skywalker.
I've got all of these on here. Harry Potter, Uncle Dursley, another married, has a child of his own as well.
Yeah. And
yeah,
I do have a section that we'll get to later, which is just called villains. And yeah, Uncle Vernon is not quite a villain, but he's not a caregiver. He's a little generous.
Yeah.
Home provider at best,
yeah,
is what he is.
Tolerator.
And then obviously Spider-Man, you've got Aunt May and Uncle Ben, and then Star Wars.
You say aunt? Are you an aunt guy?
I'm an aunt guy, unless it's Aunt May, because that's the only way I've ever heard it. So instinctively, I say that as though that's like her first and last name.
I get that.
But I say aunt. Jen says aunt.
Really?
And it is occasionally a point of contention between us. I get it. It's A-U-N-T. Aunt makes sense. But I grew up saying aunt, and I'm okay with that.
Where's the contention coming from?
She does not understand why I say aunt. That's where it comes from, because she's like, it's not an ant, it's not a bug. There's a U in there. I was like, I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah.
I can't stop saying it.
Yeah.
I love it so much. And so,
can't not say aunt.
But then, yeah, you've got Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru, I think, right? Luke Skywalker's.
Yeah, yeah.
So in that case, it's an aunt and uncle. The idea here being that Uncle Ben dies, Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru die, and so
Uncle Dursley does not die.
Uncle Dursley does not die. And what is it? Petunia?
Petunia,
yeah. So obviously those aren't strictly uncle situations, but it is a situation of parents have died or whatever, and now the child is staying with uncle or aunt and uncle.
So you've got the difference between Uncle Ben and Aunt May. I can't say it.
Sure, say aunt. That's fine.
is that they welcome Peter and treat him as the child, as opposed to like Uncle Vernon, who is, and so that reminds me of like, there's, and again, also Uncle Owen treats Luke as a child, but there's also like the category of like the uncle who is begrudgingly the caretaker. I think of this isn't a particular version because it's in the story, but then multiple movies made of The Secret Garden, which is kind of a simple thing.
Where, I've never like, seen any version of it.
Okay. Well, the girl doesn't feel very welcomed as far as I recall it. I don't know. I wouldn't go so far as to call him a villain, but it's just one of those things like, it's always clear like who like the biological son is, and then the biological like, you know, niece is a different she's not made to feel part of the family.
Along those lines, I would say not quite a villain. There's a I will be mentioning Dickens a couple of times here. The first one, not quite a villain, which is Ebenezer Scrooge and his nephew Fred.
I forgot he had a nephew.
Yeah, and because it's the son of Scrooge's sister, who he actually was very fond of, and Fred is the one who like invites him to the Christmas party and stuff. And he even says, he even refers to him even angrily as like my dear nephew and stuff like that. So it's just like it's definitely antagonistic, but I wouldn't say that he is full on villain. We'll get to a Dickensian villainous uncle a little later.
Okay. Yeah. I think I know who you've got there.
Yeah.
Who are the other caretakers before we like,
so, you know,
like full time caretakers, I mean,
full time. That's tough for me because I do have some where it's like, it's, they are full time for a while. Like, you know, for example, Uncle Buck.
Okay. Let's move on to that, to the, the like, or I guess, do we have anything else we want to say about the full time?
Well, just it's, I think,
as opposed to just listing off examples.
Well, I think it gets into like, maybe it's just because, you know, before I was a dad, I was an uncle. It's crazy to think that my nephew is, let's see, what is it, 2020? He's 19. He's almost 19. That's insane to me. Like, you and I were roommates when he was first born, and it was crazy. You know, I watched videos of him at our apartment.
Well, I mean, I think I mentioned my nephew on my wife's side is going to be 18 this year. Yeah. Like, when I met him, he was 4 years old. He couldn't even say Aunt Natalie. He called her Aunt Nally.
Aww.
Which we still remind him of.
Yeah.
Sometimes. But, time flies.
It's, yeah. And so it's probably just because I've been an uncle for a long time, but so it might just be one of those things like, you know, when you drive a certain car, you see that car all over the place. That said, I can't think of many movies where it's about an aunt and her relationship with her, niece or nephew or both.
I didn't even think to look that up. So I have to think.
I mean, certainly there are like aunt characters, but and there probably are examples.
James and the Giant Peach, are those his aunts?
Sure. Yeah. Aunt Sponge and Aunt Spiker. Yeah. No question about it.
Yeah.
Who mercifully are killed by that giant peach early on in the story. It rolls over them.
That's right.
In the movie, they make it. So I think they make it so they're not dead. In the book, they are dead. But yeah, and so I do think that, and yeah, there probably are examples. Obviously, I mean, we mentioned, you know, Aunt May. I'm going with the David pronunciation right now. So there are examples, but it's just, I think there's just honestly something about like a childless guy, often single, not always, but often. And the idea, because I think we have this idea of, in the same way that like, if it's happened, I'm not thrilled with it, but like sometimes I'll be out with the kids and someone, it's only happened a couple of times, but someone's like, oh, you're babysitting. It's like, no,
because
they're
that.
My kids.
Yeah, you're parenting.
So it could be the idea of like, a man, single or otherwise, apparently, being in charge of the caregiver of children. It's not exactly a Mr. Mom situation, because it is often played for humor, but also drama, as we see in Manchester by the Sea and Come On, Come On. And there tends to be this element of, oh, this sort of forces the uncle to grow up a little bit. Now, Manchester by the Sea, he, you know, spoilers, he was a father.
Yeah.
And so he's actively trying not to be in this position again. Yeah. So that's a different thing. It's not that he's immature. It's that he's got a lot of understandable baggage that he needs to get past. But one, you know, the line that you quoted from Come On, Come On, as like one of your favorites, is something to the effect of like Joaquin Phoenix saying like, I don't know if he's selfish or me,
He says he's spoiled, and he pauses and says, or maybe I am.
Right. Spoiled, yeah. Not selfish. Yeah. Yeah. And it's that sort of thing. Like, he, certainly whenever you are the caregiver, whether it be a new parent or whatever, you come to realize just how how much you've had it your own way for a while. And so I do think that, like, just culturally, the idea of a man, again, often single, but not exclusively, a man having to suddenly do this is, it's like, oh, this is this kind of situation is ripe for comedy or drama or a nice arc, whatever it is. And so I do think that it's this kind of thing is something that you see more with uncles than you do aunts. Mm-hmm. I might be wrong. Again, it might just be because I am an uncle, but yeah. So I wanted to talk about that at this moment, because
yeah.
The idea of being a primary caretaker, and it's like, they don't have anyone else, so I guess it's me.
So often, storyline wise, you've got these kind of like dual coming of age stories, because mm-hmm. you've got the kid yeah. and the, like, because we define maturity by parenthood sometimes,
yeah.
Which I don't think is, as a childless person, is not fair,
right.
To imply that I am not like fully matured yet because I don't have kids.
Keep at it, buddy. You'll get there.
But that's often the storylines that we get, is that the, be it Joaquin Phoenix in Come On, Come On, or Mark Ruffalo in You Can Count on Me, yeah. or John Candy and Uncle Buck, like,
sure.
they've got some growing to do, and they have their yeah. journey, and also they're like going hand in hand on a coming of age journey with the kid.
And I do think that it also, because everybody has an idea, and we'll get, I do have a section that I just put under like misfits, which is like sort of the goofy uncle, whether it be likable or unlikable, whatever it is. But there is this idea, it's like, because they have not had to do this before, and because they're, you know, these single, often curmudgeonly guys, they have a certain degree of freedom that a father or a mother wouldn't have, which yeah. is why in Uncle Buck, for example, when he is called in to like talk with, it's a super obvious scene, and I don't actually like the way it's written, but I love John Candy, so I don't mind it. When he's like called in to talk to, I think, like his niece's like principal or something right. like that. And the principal is like talking very seriously, and he's just like he's just mystified. And were he the dad or the mom, he probably would not feel quite so free to assess the situation the way he wants to. But I do think that because it's an uncle situation, that allows you to be a little more like fun mm-hmm. about things. And in the case of something like Come On, Come On, and I think Uncle Buck, it's like, it starts like that, but eventually they do need to, it's like, yeah, you can't do this the whole time. Eventually you do need to like correct the child or even discipline the child. I don't mean like, you know, spanking or anything like right. that, but just saying like, you can't do what you want to do. And I, even though I'm really immature, I'm the adult here, and I'm able to see where you're headed.
But often, like, I feel like the uncles in the movie are able to parent in a way that would be inappropriate for a parent.
Oh,
to,
yes.
You
oh,
know?
Yes.
Like, I don't know. Like, if someone's bullying a kid, this is just a general example. The parent can't like beat up the bully.
Right.
The uncle can intimidate or
threaten the bully.
Yes.
Or yes.
Oh absolutely. Yeah. Cause there's in Uncle Buck Buck is going to be like our,
it's going to be a
movie
big one, yeah.
We keep coming back to as a touchstone just because of our age, I guess.
Did you ever watch the sitcom with Kevin Meaney?
No, I watched some of the more recent one with, Mike Epps.
That's right. Yes.
It was great.
Was it great? Okay.
No, I never watched the Kevin Meaney one.
Didn't think it was bad, but I was a kid.
But it was, this still like comes up sometimes that like in the pilot episode of the Kevin Meaney Uncle Buck, one of the kids says like, "You suck," or "That sucks." And there were like literally like think pieces about like, how have we let like the standards fall so low on television that a little boy can say something sucks? Because I guess to a lot of people, it still meant what it technically means, but no one thinks of it as being about fellatio anymore.
Yeah, no, not anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy. Being a fan of American Dad, like, and it being for a while on network TV, you just watch like, it's like, wow, the stuff that they like, it seems scandalous. Mm-hmm. Even though I'm now accustomed to like TV shows being able to say certain things. So now, of course, there's primary caregivers. And then I also have a section here for like sort of temporary caregivers or support.
Well, see, I think of those as two separate
things.
Like, I feel like Uncle Buck is a temporary caregiver because the parents are coming back.
Right. But, and I guess Come On is also that, but we don't know how long that's going to be.
Yeah.
It's sort of an indefinite thing.
Support is... Yeah, let's go on to supporting uncles then, because that's fun, because that's where, like, I think from the kid character's point of view... You get like someone who's like I was saying before, you can parent in a way that a parent can't. Like, you get like someone who's like both a mentor and a friend, you know, like Uncle Fester.
Yeah, I've got him in my misfits category here, but
he is that. Like, he is, in certain situations, he is someone the kids can like talk to for advice. Weird, like Adam's family type of advice, but advice. But in other situations, he's the one they like have fun with.
Yeah, I throw in Merrill Hess from Signs. Another Walking Phoenix.
Another Walking Phoenix uncle.
America's uncle,
Walking Phoenix.
Oh, good God. I guess you could he is a horrifying uncle in Gladiator as well, now that I think about it.
I don't remember that.
But
I forgot about another temporary one. Because I can't remember much about the movie, but there's a 2004 Spanish movie called, well, the Spanish name is Cachorro, but it was released as Bear Cub here.
Okay.
Which is about a single young, like, gay man.
Okay.
Who's like a bear, you know, who becomes a long-term caregiver for his nephew. And so it's like, there's just a lot of cute, like, it's these, like, you know, gay bears and like all his friends, and then they're all like helping take care of this little kid. It's a cute movie. I don't remember much about it, but anyway, I just wanted to mention that before we move on to back to support.
Yeah. So there's a couple movies that I wanted to mention, one of which no one remembers but me, from the 90s, but it's a very similar type of movie to Secondhand Lions, which people do remember because it has Michael Caine and Robert Duvall.
And
the
movie's
called And Haley Joel Osment. But the film from the 90s is called Unstrung Heroes. It's got Michael Richards, and I want to say, I think Mike McShane.
Who is Mike McShane?
You'd know him, well, from Whose Line Is It Anyway is a big one, but he's also the psychiatrist who has a heart attack in Office Space. He was Friar Tuck in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Yeah.
He's been in a bunch of stuff. He's FDR in Seinfeld in the backwards episode.
But wait.
Franklin Delano Romanowski, but I might be wrong.
I think you're wrong.
It might not be
because
him.
Here's who's in Unstrung Heroes, directed by Diane Keaton, by the way.
Okay.
Annie McDowell, John Turturro, Michael Richards. Maury Chaykin.
I'm thinking Maury Chaykin.
You could be thinking of Jack McGee.
I think it's Maury Chaykin than I'm thinking of, because it's he and Michael Richards are kind of the goofy uncles. That's right. I'm thinking.
But you know Jack McGee?
Absolutely. Yeah,
he's also got that.
Yeah, but like, I think he and so I think like John Turturro and Weston Michael Richards and Maury Chaykin, I think they're all brothers. And Jack McGee doesn't fit. Yeah, and I think it's based on a true story. Looking at the credits here, it's based on a book by Franz Lids, and the last name Lids shows up quite a bit here. And and so there's a character named Franz Lids. So yeah, it's, and again, I haven't seen it in many years. Obviously, for some reason, I mixed up Mike McShane and Maury Chaykin, which I feel bad about because I love Maury Chaykin, but.
Completely understandable.
But yeah, and so it is like this kid who whose parents are Andy McDowell and John Turturro, and he gets sort of pulled into the very strange situation with his uncles, his sort of reclusive uncles played by Michael Richards and Maury Chaykin. Mm-hmm. Along those lines, I can't believe this is not on my list. I'm just now thinking of it, and thank God, A Thousand Clowns.
Oh,
that's
a
big one.
I'm glad you mentioned it, because I didn't get it either. I haven't seen that in 20 plus years.
But yeah, yeah, I just got it on Blu-ray for Christmas. I haven't watched it in a while, but that and I don't remember if that is a temporary situation or a long-term situation, but that is another, like, this idea of sort of the free spirit uncle, and that's something that you find in Unstrung Heroes, you find in Secondhand Lions, and it's definitely something that you see in A Thousand Clowns.
And who's the actor in A Thousand Clowns?
Jason Robards. Yeah.
I know I bring this up every time Jason Robards' name comes up, but like, there aren't a lot of the guys that age named Jason.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people our age named, like, Jason was a very popular name for people born in the early to mid 80s.
Yeah.
But like, it's always like weird to me when I'm watching Magnolia and I'm like, that old man is named Jason, which I think of as like a bully to school with.
And I recognize, like it's how, for a long time, it's how I thought about Jeremy Irons, who I recognized was not as old as Jason Robards, but it's just like, his name's like Jeremy.
Yeah.
I knew people named Jeremy and they weren't similar to Jeremy Irons.
Yeah.
You know,
Gary was not like a name that people had until Gary Cooper.
Is that true?
Because Gary Cooper is not his name. I can't remember what Gary Cooper's real name is. But he, like, his stage name, he named himself after Gary, Indiana.
Huh.
And that popularized people being named Gary.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
And I'm sure there were other Garys, but the name Gary exploded because of Gary Cooper and his stage name.
I'm reminded of I was watching a comedy bit by old friend of the show Sean Cullen, where he was talking about this story that he had seen on the news regarding like a Chinese family, and he just, so he's voicing the family and he goes quick Keith, and then he turns to the audience he goes I don't know Chinese names. I'm sorry. I'm just going to come up with other names. And so he picks the whitest names.
Yeah, that's very funny.
He goes with Darren. and at one point, one of the fictional characters in his bit dies and goes, "Oh, poor Gary."
That's funny.
It's the brilliance of Sean Cullen.
Yeah.
We should have him back.
We should.
Yes, we should have him back. Okay, note to self.
Where were we with the supporting uncles?
Yeah, so I mean I've said the ones that I can think of, and obviously a lot of the examples could fit into different categories.
Yeah. Because where do we draw the line between like supportive uncle and uncle who's basically just a friend? Because like, okay, or his. Supposed to be like Uncle Rico, Napoleon Dynamite is like supposed to be a support,
Yeah, he's I have him. I'll just pivot into my Misfits section because I do have Napoleon Dynamite. I have Adam's Family. I have Home Alone. I have The House with the Clock in Its Walls.
Oh, I never saw that. And Jack Black is the uncle?
Yeah.
That's a cool uncle.
And then I never saw the movie Uncle Frank, but I believe Paul Bettany plays like a gay uncle.
Is that an Alan Ball movie?
I don't remember. I think I want to say it was Amazon. I remember it had some like early awards buzz, but it just wasn't a high profile movie. Let me look it up.
Wait, what about Uncle Bilbo Baggins?
Oh, sure, absolutely. Right? Oh, that shit. There's another one. That's I guess he doesn't die, but he does go away after a certain point. Like for a while, when I was lecturing about three act structure, and I was lecturing about the hero's journey. So I mentioned like Frodo Baggins and Luke Skywalker and Harry Potter, and just like these uncles who. If they are loving, they either have to die or just go away. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens to Bilbo. But yeah, he's a bit of a misfit himself. Yes, Uncle Frank is written and directed by Alan Ball and stars
Paul Bettany. Good memory, David.
So, well done. Sorry, go on.
Well, I have another example of the supposed to be supportive uncle who's not.
Okay.
From a recent movie that almost no one saw. Called Sundown.
Okay.
Tim Roth and I guess I'm gonna like minor spoilers, very minor spoilers, but technically a spoiler for Sundown. And I guess I already gave it away, so never mind. I already spoiled it for you. The movie is introduced with what you think is a family on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Roth and Charlotte Gainsbourg seem to be parents to these two young children, and then, there's a death in the family, and Charlotte Gainsbourg like leaves and takes the kids, and we're like, why isn't he going? And we eventually realize it's slowly teased out that like, oh, they're brother and sister. He's like this weird like loner who like she convinced to like begrudgingly come along in this vacation with him, and now like she's left and he's left in Acapulco all by himself. Then that's the premise of the movie.
Oh, that's right. I read your
review. It's not a great movie.
It's not a great, yeah. You wrote a review of it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's right. It's, you know, along those lines, I mentioned it already, but I'll throw in like a Mark Ruffalo in You Can Count on Me, who is kind of tries to be a buddy to his nephew and that kind of thing. But he also brings so many of his own issues to the situation that he winds up being potentially damaging. I believe it's Rory Culkin, who plays his nephew, and
and
his nephew has never met his father, played by Josh Lucas, and kind of idealizes him a little bit. And Mark Ruffalo, who is sort of a cynic and is not able to think the way a kid thinks and is not able to sort of understand what could potentially be damaging. And he decides like, oh, I know your dad. I'm going to take you to go see him. And it's like, this could only be disappointing, if not straight up traumatizing. That's the only thing it could be. And so he takes him to see his father. And of course, his father's like, I didn't want anything to do with this. Why is this happening? Why are you doing this to me? And then of course, the kid is heartbroken. And then Laura Linney is saying, like, what are you doing? Like, it's like he's going to referring to the kid, like he's going to realize the world is shitty soon enough. He doesn't need you, I love that screenplay. I just love that movie in general.
Yeah.
And it's just the brilliance of Kenneth Lonergan. But like, Mark Ruffalo is a likable character, and we're on board with him, and we can even kind of see what he's doing. But it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, he is unable to get out of his own way, and if there's a kid around, that could be hurtful to the kid in some capacity. And so eventually she says like, you have to go at least for a while. And I love that scene. And it's because he has good intentions up to a point. He just can't get out of his own way. And, And there's a certain tragedy in that. Like when everybody who means well, like everyone involved pretty much means well, but they just can't gel. And I think that's such a brilliant bit of drama.
By the way, I had a thought of why there aren't as many aunts or aunts, if you prefer, in this type of role. And it's because it's usually the grandma.
That's true.
In that situation where if a female family member is taking over raising, it's usually the grandma.
Yeah.
In the movies. I'm not saying that's true in real life. Yeah. I'm saying that seems to be the case in the movies and TV. You think of like Matt Saracen on Friday Night Lights and his grandma.
That's true.
Yeah.
I feel like, I mean, we could definitely do a series on this and just go through every potential family member and be like, all right, let's talk about some grandparents.
Yeah.
Good and bad. Bad, Noah Cross from Chinatown. Bad parent / grandparent. I'm fine to move into villains here.
Yeah, we got a bunch of bad guys, which I'm very excited about. Although I guess kind of a transition here.
Okay.
Would be the movie Stoker.
Oh, okay, which I've not seen.
I think it's Matthew Good.
Yeah.
Because he is, Matthew Good, who plays Uncle Charlie, and also Tender Bar, Ben Affleck is Uncle Charlie.
Yeah.
Very different Uncle Charlies.
Oh, shit.
Yes.
Hang on, I'll look it up. Go ahead.
Stoker, he is definitely, Matthew Good's character is definitely villainous, but he's also a mentor in Mia Wasikowska's character's journey to becoming evil herself.
Okay.
Great movie. I really love Stoker.
That is one of those movies, we talk about it regularly, where it was a big priority at the time. I'd heard nothing but great things about it. I didn't see it. And now it's what, 10 years old? Maybe
9 years old.
9 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just need to get around to it. But
you've got like, look at it. Mia Wasikowska, Nicole Kidman, Matthew Good, Dermot Mulroney, and Jackie Weaver are all in this movie.
Nice.
Obviously, pre-fame Alden Ehrenreich. I have to see the movie again to remember him in it.
Yeah, he was bouncing around for a while. So you mentioned Uncle Charlie. Uncle Charlie is the name of Joseph Cotten's character in Shadow of a Doubt. Who is a full-on villain.
Oh, I've never seen Shadow of a Doubt.
And it's really good, and he essentially is a serial killer who, like, finds, like, wealthy widows and, like, marries them and then kills them and then takes their money, but nobody knows, like, who it is.
Whatever works.
Maybe he doesn't marry them, but I think he just gets to know them. But anyway, and he's seen as, like, the cool, fun uncle. And his niece, who is also named Charlie, like, they've always had this bond. And so then he comes to stay and she comes to realize, like, well, at the moment he's just kind of hiding out. And so, when she discovers what he's been doing, she feels very betrayed. And I do think that, you know, in the case of a lot of these, the uncles do not have a close relationship to their nephew or niece. They're pretty distant in general. So it's not that it's surprising insofar as like, wow, I can't believe a blood relative would do such a thing. But in the case of Shadow of a Doubt, like, I wouldn't say it's an emotional film. Hitchcock movies are rarely emotional, but there is a very clear bond between young Charlie and old Charlie, and this feeling of like, oh, he was the cool, fun uncle, and he's actually a monster. And it's a different kind of performance by Joseph Cotten as well, which is fun.
I keep wanting to play around with the villain, like, not quite a villain, like, okay, the Stoker. Well, we skipped one. Okay, I guess he's kind of introduced as a bad guy, but quickly becomes a good guy. Bruno from Encanto.
Oh, sure.
Right?
Yes.
Absolutely. But, what I want to mention is a movie that no one remembers, even though it's only, like, 5 or 6 years old. A movie called Kicks.
Okay.
It's about a kid who gets his sneakers stolen.
Oh, all right.
And goes to get them back. It's the only actor that I remember that's of any note is in a small role, and it's Mahershala Ali.
Oh, nice.
Who plays the kid's uncle, but who is like a career criminal.
Okay.
But like he basically just has, it's a glorified cameo really, but basically a scene of being like the kid goes to him for help, like, to help me get my shoes back, and Mahershala Ali's character basically says, like, you don't want to go down this path.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to come to me unless you absolutely have to. It's a really great, really, like, little scene. It could be a little if that movie had been a bit bigger, it could have been like a what do we call the Bruce McGill Award,
sure,
type of thing. I forgot the name of the award.
The idea of like the criminal uncle, I believe Ben Mendelsohn in Animal Kingdom is that, right? Like, well, I mean, the whole family is criminal,
yeah,
but he's
right.
Like the worst one.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah,
but he does not warn his nephew away from this.
No.
I think he just threatens him the whole time and tries to kill him.
That reminds me, did you ever see Paid in Full with Mekhi Phifer?
I did not.
What's his name? Ron Cephas Jones? Is that what his name is from This Is Us?
Oh, that sounds right to me. I know who you're talking about.
So Mekhi Phifer's character becomes like a very successful drug dealer,
mm-hmm.
and then he has an uncle who's a drug addict who like does some very bad stuff to the family to try and like get some drugs from it. Anyway, it's a that's a bad uncle.
Well, and you know, there are also uncles who maybe are not even like full-fledged characters, but they are monstrous, like in the movie Split, where Anya Taylor-Joy's uncle is, I think we only see him in flashbacks. I might be wrong about that, but he's not a fully developed character. He's essentially just like I think he's the one taking care of her, and I think like molests her or whatever.
Man, I don't remember that. I gotta watch Split again. I don't know.
Sure, it's worth watching, but obviously there's some tough stuff there.
Yeah. I thought of another villainous uncle, although I could be misremembering.
Okay.
Because I haven't seen the movie in over 10 years. Is Teardrop in Winter's Bone her uncle?
Yes, he is. Oh, that's great. I'm frustrated that I forgot that. Yeah, he is not a. I would put him in the situation of like he means well. But he's going to do things his own way, regardless of what she needs.
He's very scary.
He is very scary. Yeah. And yet also, like, you're on his side. And I do like that because his brother has been killed. And he kind of helps his niece where he can. But also, the film ends with him essentially being like, well, I guess I got to just try and kill everybody in this organization now.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like, well, he's not Jason Bourne. He's probably not going to be able to do it before they get him. But he's probably going to take a good number of people down with him.
Yeah.
Like, the story is definitely not over for him, and it's not going to go great.
That's a great one.
And that's a great performance, too.
Yeah, I should watch that again. First movie I ever watched on Blu-ray when I got, because it was 2010 was when I got my Blu-ray player, and I like rented it from the Redbox. They had Blu-rays at the Redbox, and it was the first movie I watched on Blu-ray. Winter's Bone, not a movie that people think of as a funny movie.
No, but
I would say,
yeah,
the thing about Winter's Bone that my wife and I talk about the most is it like a social worker or something pulls up driving like not a brand new car,
right?
But everyone's like, ooh.
Yeah, it's that tracks.
Yeah.
Let's see. Now, I'm. Things are coming to me now.
For on villains, you still haven't mentioned the other Charles Dickens one that I'm
right, which is Nicholas Nickleby.
Yes, that's what I thought it was.
Is it Uncle Ralph?
It's been, you've seen it more recently.
Yeah.
And I've always had a better memory
and
for
it's,
it.
And it's been many years since I've seen it, and it's been adapted multiple times. But I'm talking about the one from 2003 in which the
Christopher Plummer plays
wonderful Christopher Plummer performance. And he just is this character. Like any Dickens character, he's fun to listen to. He's fun. You enjoy him being on screen. But he's just he is such a bastard that I'm perfectly willing to say that is a villain. Granted, there's a tragic element to him. I think he eventually ends himself by the end of the film. And you get the impression that he loathes himself quite a bit, but not quite as much as he loathes everybody else, including his own nephew. And he has, it's so fucking Dickensian. The idea that like Nicholas's like father has died, and so like he comes into the care of his uncle, and his uncle not only. It's like, yeah, I guess I'll try to teach you what I know, but also I didn't like your dad. I know you're grieving, but I didn't like him. and it's just so, and I do love the way Plummer plays him. And I love that Tom Courtenay plays like his right-hand man, who's just like this beaten down guy. And the two of them have this delightful chemistry. Like at one point, Uncle Ralph says to his like right hand man, he's like, he refers to him as like a bird of some kind, and Tom Courtenay, he goes, I wish I was a bird, I'd fly away. And then he goes, I wish you were a bird too, I'd wring your neck. And it's just this delightful thing. Incidentally, I feel bad, as far as good uncles, I forgot to mention Uncle Jack from The Magnificent Ambersons, played by Ray Collins, who's a wonderful character. But anyway,
that's a good one. We need more classic movies on here, Vince. You did a good job with that. I mean, there's an uncle in like Mary Poppins.
Yeah, like, and he's big, like, played by Ed Wynn, I think, right?
Is that right?
I might be wrong about that.
I don't remember.
But,
yeah, I haven't seen Mary Poppins in a long time. Well, as long as we're on villains, there's maybe the first one that came to mind. Well, the first uncle that came to mind was Uncle Buck. But the first villainous uncle that came to mind is Claudius / Scar.
/ whoever it is from the Northmen. Like, it's right, the same right, character, yeah. Essentially, in all three.
We should know his name, because... In the Northmen, because he said, the kid says over and over again, I will save you, mother. I will avenge you, father. I will kill you, Fjolnir, something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I want to say it's Italian. Anyway.
Played by Clias Bang.
It's great. Such a wonderful performance.
Yeah, he's The Square, he was in.
But
he
was, which I didn't see.
He played on Showtime's The Affair. Because I always think like Clias Bang is like maybe a bit like too traditionally handsome sometimes for me to like buy. But on The Affair, he played like a movie star who would start in a series of like James Bond ripoffs. And it was like kind of, it was perfect.
Oh, I love that kind of specificity.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, certainly this character is what I'm talking about, in that like, you know, we feel a sense of betrayal in so far as I can't believe a family member would do such a thing. Mm-hmm. But we don't feel a sense of betrayal that we do from like Shadow of a Doubt, where it's like, oh my gosh, we thought he was good, but he's not. No, we know Claudius and Scar and the other guy's name that I've already forgotten, Fjolnir,
I think.
We know they're pretty bad. Although I guess Fjolnir, that is treated as a bit of a reveal because it's very much from the main character's perspective. But yeah, and it's just this idea of I want to be in charge and I can't be. And it's just, and all I got to do is get my brother out of the way and then a few other minor details like my nephew and no problem. And it's, yeah, I mean, it's the... any kind of villainous uncle character might not fit this mold, but will immediately be like, okay, so is this a Claudius situation?
Yeah,
it's not. Okay. But like, it's the example that other villainous uncles will be compared to. But yeah. I never saw Kenneth Branagh's, Hamlet.
Oh,
and I think it's Derek Jacobi who plays Claudius.
That sounds right.
I'm
sure I saw when I was in high school.
Sure, he's wonderful.
It's 4 hours long.
But obviously Jeremy Irons is marvelous, and it's just if you get a chance, and what I like about the Northman is that character is not he's done something villainous, certainly, and he's very brutal in certain ways, but as the film unfolds, you're like, yeah, but at the same time, nobody's really a hero here. He's just doing what, he's just going further than some people. And I also love that by the time, like, we do our jump in time, he doesn't even have what he wanted anymore. He's just like this low level, he's a powerful farmer at best. And I love that because it makes his character just a little bit more vulnerable, that like he didn't even keep the kingdom, you know, but yeah. Anyway,
so. I've only got a couple of just didn't know where to fit them. I haven't seen Wizard of Oz since I was a kid, but I know Uncle Henry is a part of it. I've seen the original British film Death at a Funeral.
Oh, right. Okay.
And that has a character named Uncle Alfie, who's like played by Peter Vaughn, if you know that like character actor. He's one of those like British character actors who like has looked like he's 80 years old for decades. And I say has, he actually died a few years ago, but here, this guy, that's him in Game of Thrones. But he shows up in a lot of stuff. It's just like old guy. And he plays, he's basically like a plot device, which is basically he's like a cantankerous old man in a wheelchair who needs help going to the bathroom, and that means that he is an inconvenience to the plot happening because they like keep having to deal with Uncle Alfie, and it's funny or whatever, but I haven't seen the American remake, but my understanding is Danny Glover plays that role, which is one more reason I always wonder why, because it's the American remake is who directed it?
It's Neil LaBute, right?
Neil LaBute.
Which is in itself fascinating.
But then it also has Alan Tudyk plays the same role for some reason.
That's fun.
Peter Dinklage plays the same role.
Peter Dinklage plays the same role. Okay.
Yeah. James Marsters, I think, plays the Alan Tudyk role.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, you're right. Peter Dinklage plays the same role because I guess they couldn't find another dwarf actor to do it.
I guess. Also, it's just like, it's Peter Dinklage. Like, why would we even recast this?
Yeah. And at least they didn't... Look, I love Peter Dinklage like everybody does. But I'm glad that in the British Death at a Funeral, they made his character American. Mm. Because we learned one thing from Game of Thrones, is that he doesn't do a very good British accent. He did one for however many years on Game of Thrones, and it was never great.
Yeah, it's interesting. And thankfully, in Cyrano, he speaks with like an American accent.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that I think that his... Even when he... He can't be British, but he's not casual American either.
Right.
Like, he has a very specific cadence that has a formal quality to it.
Which
like, even when he's on 30 Rock, playing just a guy.
Did you ever see when he hosted SNL?
I've seen sketches from it. I saw Space Pants, which I thought was absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, because he's not like... He is there as a serious actor to do SNL, and it makes some sketches... awkward, but it makes some sketches so great.
Okay.
Did you... There's the one sketch where it's like the business, like corporate retreat or whatever, and there's like a comedian.
Okay.
Who like decides to roast the boss a little bit, played by Peter Dinklage. And Peter Dinklage plays the boss who's like trying so hard because he knows he's supposed to be cool with it, but he... Like, his ego is wounded.
Oh.
It's so great.
That sounds wonderful. The one I'm talking about when I say Space
Pants. Oh, yeah, that's Space
Pants. Oh, my gosh.
All right. Did you have any more, or are we done?
I think we're done. And as always, I'm sure that there are many that we are missing.
Yeah.
You know, especially, like, in the world of superheroes, I'm sure there's a lot of really amazing uncles, uncle characters, villains, heroes, mentors, whatever. I'm sure there are a bunch that we're missing out on. So obviously in the comments section, if we missed out on any glaring ones, please let us know.
To balance things out, we're going to have to do a Grandma's episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
That'll be fun. Until then, and in between now and then, whenever you want, you can find us at BattleshipRetention.com. You can email us at David@BattleshipRetention.com or Tyler@BattleshipRetention.com. You can follow me, David, on Twitter @DavyPretension. By the way, BattleshipRetention.com is where you find movie reviews, including Tyler's Jurassic World
Dominion
review, and soon an Elvis review. I was bummed that I couldn't make that screening. I was glad that someone could.
I was glad, yeah. And then shortly thereafter, Thor. I'm trying to take more screenings right now.
Yeah, you're taking all the, like...
Yeah, I'm taking all the fun ones.
The tent poles, I guess. I don't know if Elvis is a tent pole, but it's a big studio release, at least. Anyway, those are all there. Also, check out my other podcast. It's called The One Where I Met Your Mother. My wife, Natalie, and I watch an episode of Friends and an episode of How I Met Your Mother. This most recent episode, it's interesting. We got a Friends episode that works like a How I Met Your Mother episode, because How I Met Your Mother is so flashback heavy. Mm-hmm. We watched the one with the flashback where we find out like how Joey came to meet the rest of the gang. And we actually see them hanging out at a bar instead of a coffee shop, which is very How I Met Your Mother-ish. And then we watched the How I Met Your Mother episode that was not one of their best, even though it had some good... guest stars, including Kevin Heffernan from Broken Lizard.
Yeah.
And that one's called I'm Not That Guy. So anyway, we watched those episodes. We watch an episode of each every week and discuss. That's where you can find me. Tyler's on Twitter at Tyler Pretension. What do you have to plug, Tyler? I did the thing. You know how you sometimes like mix up your intros to different podcasts?
Yes.
I almost did the thing that I say to Natalie, which is like, where do you want people to find you on the internet?
Indeed.
Which the joke is I don't. That's what she,
yes.
This is a running joke on The One Where I Met Your Mother, where at the end of every episode I say, Natalie, where do you want people to find you on the internet? She says, I don't.
Nice.
It's a good joke. But what do you got to plug? That's what I meant to say.
Nothing at the moment. I guess I mentioned, my Jurassic World Dominion review, which, I got a couple compliments on, which is very nice. Okay. There's a couple little turns of phrase in there that I'm happy with. But
very nice.
But yeah, and so I do have some reviews coming up. But go check out my documentary, Valley of the Shadow something or other. Enjoy.
All right. Thank you for listening.
We'll get you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.